Dreams are the cinema of the mind, and your cinema is screening something like 70s street gang movies starring Danny Trejo. But in your waking life, Danny Trejo and his business partner are focused on taking their taco chain nationwide. Hide away from the conscious world, friends. Return to slumber. And take note. I am Adam Webb, and joining me, my friend of 21 short years, Ted Walker.
Hello, Adam.
Ted, how are you doing?
I'm great. It's so good to be with you. For another evening, after the kids have all unwillingly gone to bed, and there's a little bit of West Coast baseball on the television. My son, 4-year-old, recently said, "Daddy, I had a great dream last night. I dreamed about a rabbit with a black hand."
What the? Wow.
Loved it.
That's fantastic.
No word of a nightmare anywhere within 10 yards of that one.
That's great. Well, perhaps this will be the dream episode of Take Note, because...
Let's list off our dreams.
Well, I could do that, but that's... Instead, I wrote the intro, for fear that I would otherwise just detail my dreams.
So, Adam, what do you got this week?
Well, Ted, I took a few notes from the new cover story in National Geographic on the science of sleep. And it's a fantastic story, 30 pages, half of which are photos. And I've got a couple of just, little things from there that I wrote down. Every time we experience REM sleep, we literally go mad. I liked that. And then this part I just loved. When you dream, your brain is actually trying to produce movements, but a system in the brain brainstem paralyzes you, completely shutting down the motor neuron gate.
This does not bode well for whether or not when you die you can still, feel things or whatever. Knowing that the body is fully capable of disengaging one from the other.
That's true, and really without any... Right, your brain just shuts your body down. You don't have any control. That's the other thing. You have literally no control when you're dreaming, sleeping.
Yeah, your brain's like, I got this. Now, buckle up, weirdo. We're going to go to strange land. There's nothing you can do about it.
This article in National Geographic, I just want to say, fantastic. The cover tag is a quote from a doctor at Harvard. "We are now living in a worldwide test of the negative consequences of sleep deprivation."
Oh, God.
Yeah. It's a really good article. And the night after I read it, I had fantastic dreams.
Nice.
Which previously only Philip Glass's soundtrack to the Martin Scorsese flop Kundun produced. So...
I have gotten to the point where I can basically gauge how well or poorly a day has gone based on how many hours of sleep I got the night before. Like, it's a pretty much a one-to-one correlation. I'm like, I had a crappy day. Oh, I went to bed at 1 a.m. Okay.
This article and many other articles will suggest that will kill you, but... There are plenty of people who don't sleep and live long lives, so who knows? Ted, what do you got?
Oh, let's see. I got a bunch of little things this week. Nothing that'll shake the core of your relationship between your mind and your body, I don't think. May, my 6-year-old, thinks that it's very funny that my pants say Banana Republic on the back.
She thinks it's funny in a ha-ha way, or she thinks it's funny because she never really thought the name Banana Republic was appropriate for a retail store.
I think she just still can't really figure out that there's a name of fruits and things on clothing. I think she just barely forgets about it in between sightings, and it's sort of usually like hectic in the morning, and she'll just go, "Daddy, your pants say Banana Republic on them." And, of course, my wife in the background says, "Yeah, that's what our country's going to turn into in not too long now, huh?"
And then May says, Don't you think there's something inherently racist about suggesting that these the only thing good or worthwhile about these countries is that they produce bananas?
And then I start to sing an a cappella version of Banana Republic by Jimmy Buffett. And it's like a, it's basically like a Disney television show. What else you got, Adam?
Ted, I was at the coffee shop the other day. The barista had a pencil pocket in his apron, but no pencil. I asked, that's for a pencil? Yes, he said. There was no comment about the fact that it was empty. So I got my coffee. I went to the car. I opened my backpack. I pulled out my pencil holder. And I brought him a Steinbeck Blackwing. I think that's wow. the 21. And he looked at me. And he said thank you. And the look on his face was either the shock that I had done this kind gesture or shock that I was such a nerd that I went and brought him a fancy pencil. I think it was the former, but I mean, it really could have been the latter.
I'd say the odds of it being the latter are pretty slim. I'd say in this day and age, you should just be glad he didn't say, could I have a sharpener too?
He didn't say, oh, I've got this one. Do you have the new one? I was hoping for one of the pink ones. Find. I guess the fact that the man had a pencil pocket, it could only be a kind gesture. If I start bringing pencils to every barista, then it's going to be a problem.
I think, you know, the nice thing about that is even if he doesn't use the pencil, it just looks cool in the pencil pocket. So you can't go wrong.
Right.
It's like, you know, you're not burdening him with anything. If anything, you're just providing him with some flair credibility. And the problem's going to be is when the next pencil nerd rolls up and it's like, oh, the Steinbeck. Wow, amazing. Where'd you get it? What kind of price is it? And the guy's going to be like, I just asked for your name, man. I don't know. Some weirdo gave me this pencil.
Right. That you're right. It's a kind gesture until he realizes that it's a pencil for obsessives. And then I've put him into a strange social situation that he's not at all prepared for. Because if the pencil obsessive approached him and said, where did you get that limited edition Blackwing pencil? And he goes, oh, I don't know, somebody just gave it to me. The obsessive will never believe him. And he'll say, no, come on, where'd you, oh, come on. Like, it'll seem like he doesn't want to pencil geek. Yeah, that's fantastic. I really did that guy a disservice.
Either that or the pencil geek will know who you are from the Facebook group and be able to actually determine your exact identity.
Oh, I hope
based
so.
Based on geographic location and physical description.
Great. Ted, what do you got?
I have seen a surfeit of personalized license plates in the last week.
Okay.
And I know this is something you enjoy.
I do.
And I've sort of always felt like I've never seen enough to satisfy you and your desire for personalized license plate stories. But something about this week, they've just been fast and furious, to coin a phrase. they've been all over the city. I've been seeing them. So I thought I could rattle off a few of those.
Hit me.
Let's see, I got a Texas license plate, slightly customized design, not the straight up design, but the black and white design with half a star on the left. Stew 24.
Yeah, good for Stew.
Stew 24. STEW.
No.
So it could be like a stew, but it's probably, you know, Stewart.
He could be a chef, or he could be a guy who just lets little things really bother him.
And that was on a Genesis, which is a make of automobile that I still do not understand, even though I've actually looked it up on the internet before. Let's see, a bright white BMW SUV license plate. Oy vey! That was a good one. That was by far my favorite. Purple Jeep Cherokee with somehow a purple license plate that said workout.
Nice. Spelled it all
weaving
out.
Weaving in and out of traffic. Nice. That was my note on that. Another, this is my final one, a let's see, a BMW with a Saint sticker, like an old school BMW, so that, with a New Orleans Saint sticker on the back, Warp 4.
Nice.
Warp 4, which I feel like is could have been a joke, like this super old rickety BMW is going so fast it's about to hit warp speed. Maybe it's an old Trekkie. This was one of those classic, like, you know, man of a certain age with a, you know, potentially the car of his youth brought back around, and he adorned it with a self-referential license plate. What, hard not to enjoy that.
When you said that I'm a guy who likes a vanity plate, I wanted to disagree. You know, like, it was nothing special for me. And then I realized that I've noticed two vanity plates in the last 2 days. So yesterday I saw a white Cadillac. Plate was Hot Loan. And today, and here's the one that really tells you that I do pay too much attention, because this is nothing. I'm walking the dog, and a house right around the corner from me, the plate is LCH. It's nothing. And I start thinking how much fun it would be to ask the person who has that car if they're a licensed chiropractor. Like, that's the leap I made in an instant from LCH, which I know is crazy, but it's just a game in my head that I like to play.
So you were, yeah, that's pretty good. I don't find myself working too hard to interpret.
I would tell you that I don't either, but it would be a lie.
I like the oy vey, because there's nothing to interpret. It's just oy vey. What more can you say about that?
Although I think once you successfully land the oy vey license plate, you have nothing to complain about anymore.
Well, there's probably, what, maybe 10 decent variations on that. You know, maybe two Ys on the oy, mm-hmm. or two Ys on the vey, one Y, three Ys is pushing it. Can't really get away with two As on the vey, because then it's some weird. Yeah, no, it's true. That's a narrow hit.
You know, every somebody's state trying, instead of the in the vey, trying to do it with an 8, and that just doesn't work. That's oy veyt. And they're like, no, it's oy vey. And then somebody's saying, no, it's not.
They're like, you can say it's oy vey all you want, but when I see it, my head reads oy veyt. And that's all there is to it. You got anything else, Adam? What do you got?
I don't. Do you have more? Or should we move on to our notebook content?
I got... Stay tuned. One day we will bring you actual notebook content. I did have one little thing. I have two more little things.
Hit me.
The one sort of collection I have is realizing what old aphorisms actually mean. Sort of like way too late in my life. Have your cake and eat it too is my sort of archetypal example of that. I think I was 27 or 28 when suddenly I realized, oh, I just figured out what that meant.
Yeah, that's a toughie.
So the one that occurred to me the other day where I actually realized what it meant was speaking truth to power.
Okay.
And I had just never quite... You always sort of know what it means when someone says that's what you're doing, but I only realized that it's speaking the truth in question to the institute exercising the power.
Yeah.
Actually, so speaking the truth to the power.
With all of these, scenario, they'd make more sense if you rearrange them into a less less catchy phrase. Like, eat your cake and have it.
Eat a piece of cake, but also have the cake left over, even after you have the experience of eating it.
Man,
not as catchy.
Suck.
Not as catchy, but I would have gotten it when I was 8 instead of in my late 20s.
Right. Agreed.
But point taken. Anyway, that was my most recent example. Certain level of satisfaction at figuring it out. Certain level of shame in realizing that it took me so long to get there. And then my last one, and then we'll get to our coveted notebook-related content. Our email passwords or something went down at work the other day. Nobody could log in. It was a whole system-wide thing. And our IT... the first thing anybody says is Russia, which is just... It's a sign of an era. You know, we're all going to look back on this time and be like, why is every villain in every movie a Russian hacker?
I'm going to stop you for a second there. I would say about 10 years ago, maybe a little more at this point, I became very concerned with the fact that the villains in the movies had stopped being, maybe this is even before 2000, had stopped being terrorists or, I don't know, Russian hackers or whatever, and started all being journalists. And I feel, I've been thinking more and more lately that that concern that I had however many years ago turned out to be appropriate.
Wow. I see, I can't even think of examples.
Me neither, but I remember having the thought.
Hashtag follow up.
I'm going to say True Lies, but maybe not.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's interesting. We should do some following up. So after everybody's email goes down, the IT guy walked around the office from cubicle to cubicle, telling everyone that that was it. They could go home. And nobody could figure out whether or not he possessed the actual authority to let anybody go home. It was a real... Can he do... Yeah, I went home a little early, but it was a real... Can he just do that type situation? All right, and that brings us to our notebook-related content, and I don't actually know what that is yet, so I'm doing the fancy introduction voice, but I'm gonna let Adam take over starting now.
Ted, the other day I posted on the Field Nuts Facebook group a list of my top 10 future field notes. There have been a lot of top 10 lists on the group lately, a lot of bad ones, you know, frankly, just a lot of music and TV and movie based ones with a lot of questionable judgment. I was inspired by not such a bad one. Someone listed the 10 notebooks that they wanted to use in the future, 10 notebooks they were looking forward to using. But I instead posted, not instead, but inspired by that, I posted my top 10 future editions of Field Notes, editions that don't yet exist, but that I think should. And
love it.
Some of them are serious additions. Some of them are good ideas. Some of them are intentionally bad ideas. Some of them are just sort of a sliver of an idea that you'd never go with that sliver, but maybe they suggest something else. And I thought I would go through my list.
I'm ready. I'm excited.
Number,
this is fun.
Number one, Great Lakes Edition. Book dedicated to each of the Great Lakes, and then perhaps some sixth book as well.
I love that I realized in that brief window that I had no idea how many Great Lakes there were. I was going to, in my head, I said 7. And then you bailed me out with the, and a sixth book, Lake Pontchartrain.
Yeah. Well, when I think this idea comes up as a suggestion every once in a while. And whenever it does, I think bitter Canadians suggest a lake that is in Canada that is probably bigger than them all. And I'll say, I think I know the name of the lake, but I don't want to screw it up, but I also want to annoy the people who feel like this lake gets short shrift. And so I will not name it. But that could be the sixth.
I think it fits well into their oeuvre. They're a Midwest company with a Midwest ethos. Of course, Draplin's out on the West Coast. I can't say that I get excited about the idea on a personal level, because it feels a little sort of uber iconic to me. Or, I mean, I don't actually get excited about the Great Lakes as a concept. I enjoyed Lake Michigan for a time in my life, but it I don't know. I think it's cool. It's a easily digestible idea. I don't get excited about it personally.
I could see them making the lakes interesting to people who otherwise don't care about them. I would include myself in that group with the with the facts about the lakes and the size of the lakes and maybe some interesting graphics, which they do on some of the editions.
Well, and you know, it reminds me of the Blackwing Lake Tahoe edition, where they actually did put a lot of really nice energy into illuminating some elements of the lake and, you know, making it into a conservation awareness issue and doing the topography of the lake bed and making that the imprint on the pencil. So there's definitely some potential there to do some interpretation. I mean, I can't say that I always look to the Field Notes editions as providing quite that level of interpretation where I really feel like I've learned something. I don't know. Learning is not necessarily what I think of. I actually think of them simplifying concepts down to the point where it makes a notebook a nice thing to use.
I think there are some subjects where it's nice to read exactly a paragraph or a paragraph of a chart about a thing, feel like you've learned something, and then just go about your day. And I feel like the Great Lakes, that's why Great Lakes is number one.
With a nice notebook, yeah.
Yeah. Yep.
And I think the Shenandoah edition is a perfect example of that as well.
Yeah, exactly.
Because they're really nice notebooks, and they've got a little bit of tuned into that wavelength of the, is it the Smoky Mountains? I think that's what it is. Maybe it's the Shannon.
You learn exactly about some trees that you then forget the name of.
Cool. All right. Good start.
Number two on my list, I wrote Paper Planes. Thought here was something along the lines of like what they did for the pop-out fold-together notebooks, but somehow a notebook that where you're doing something with the paper inside.
Yeah, that sounds like a real rejuvenating the sweet tooth perforated edition. Maybe it's a combination of a dime novel size with a perforated sheet.
Yeah, and I like the idea, and I also recognize that it would infuriate people because it wouldn't be a notebook, but you know, something along those lines there.
Yeah. That's fun.
Next on the list, intentionally bad. Intentionally, this is, I think I once came up with this as trying to come up with the worst idea for a Field Notes edition theme. Pachinko, that is the stand-up pinball game from Japan. So just, you know, a real 180 from the USA theme. The Pachinko edition.
Which is it? I'm guessing those are sort of garish design, yes, loud, exactly. Noisy.
Uh-huh. Yep.
Yeah. Do you gamble on those? Do you win money?
I don't know. I always just played it in my grandparents' basement. They brought one back.
So when I read that that item on your notes that you provided me, the JPEG, you didn't provide me the actual notes. You kept your notebook for yourself.
I did.
Didn't mail it to me before the edition.
Sorry about that.
Or the episode. I read Plinko, which I thought actually, it's on the pachinko level, but a Plinko oriented, you know, maybe you swing into a 70s game show theme notebook. That would be kind of funny.
If you start to type Plinko into Google, it goes Plinko versus Pachinko. It auto completes Plinko versus Pachinko.
Well, Google, you've done it again.
Or Ted, you've done it again. Who needs Google?
I can confuse these two P-word weird games faster than the fastest supercomputers.
Number four on the list, you know, I think this is a great idea that I put no effort into. I just wrote trains. Something with the railway. It seems like
eventually. I think that's a brilliant idea. I think that's a wheelhouse idea that if it totally something you would want to read a paragraph about and then have a super classy some sort of design inspiration that jumps off from there. I'm really on board with that one.
Problem with that one is nerds don't like trains. We all know that about nerds.
Is that sarcasm?
Yeah, that was sarcasm.
That was sarcasm. We'll just thank edit goodness. That out. Keep, no. I was trying to have a dramatic pause for humorous purposes, but we can edit it out.
Since I was trying to make a joke for laugh purposes, but that didn't work either.
Okay, let's bring it back in. 3, 2, 1. I think trains are, you forget about them for a little while, and then they come up, and you're like, wow, these are really interesting. Trains are really interesting, and then you forget about it for a little while, but which is kind of the perfect field notes thing. Like space. Space is amazing, but you forget about space for a little while.
Sometimes you forget it's out there.
And then you remember it and you're amazed yet again.
And the people at field journalism. Notes have realized that. They'll go, hey guys, stars. Hey guys, moon. hey everybody.
Hey the beach, man.
rockets.
Rockets are amazing. I mean, there's a certain, I think when you think of the phrase Americana, which probably is overused, but there is an element to Americana that is marveling in just what the industrial age came up with and the, I think, sort of pre-digital age accomplished without the aid of digitalization. And I think, I think even that's part of the field notes ethos, is kind of stopping for a moment and taking note of how far we've come, but also the majesty of Americana that really you can kind of dig into forever and not really ever. I mean, I know that space and stars are not Americana, but when you think back to 60s space travel, that is definitely Americana. And that's like reveling in, feats of engineering.
Right. The trains, so again, I think trains provide trains. Myth and wonder.
Totally.
Yeah.
This does, I always think, when I think trains, I think Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, which I think actually might tie into your sort of number 8 down there, which we can take our time and get to.
Oh, a little teaser. Okay, number 5, I wrote Mies van der Rohe. He's a German-American architect, designed a number of amazing buildings in Chicago. And this has actually been, as ridiculous as this is one of those that's just a little sliver of an idea. They'd obviously never make a Mies van der Rohe edition. But it's been an idea that's just stuck in my head for a while, because I think it kind of fits with, there's Chicago, there's modernism. Yeah. There's architecture. So it wouldn't be a Mies van der Rohe edition, but maybe it would be something along those lines. And I, in a way, I think of the Northerly, the all white with the silver. For some reason, that seems like a very modern look of an edition. So secretly,
I think you can do sort of 3 iconic architects edition.
Yeah.
And maybe it's each book touches on a certain style. That'd be amazing. Mies van der Rohe, I don't know much about him, but his style certainly lends itself to the spare geometric gridded notebook, right?
Yeah, I think so. Next one I wrote down here was Borders, North and South. 2-3 packs. One for the North Border, one for the South Border, and I think something like the neutral colors of the National Crops edition, that representing the colors of the borders with neutral colors. That's my thought for that one.
What color represents a border? I'm curious.
Well, Ted, I'm colorblind, but I don't know, but I think I could definitely see desert colors for the South border.
Earthiness.
Yeah, some very earthiness. And then maybe, the northern border is so long that maybe there isn't any, maybe there isn't three good colors that would represent it, but it's something foresty.
I think dark pine tree, medium dark pine tree, and
Yeah.
then light pine tree would probably take care of that.
Great. Done.
I love that. I mean, I think obviously everyone thinks borders right now, and they get incensed and go into a different realm, but maybe it's an opportunity to kind of take it back to basics.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's like a 90-degree turn from the Coast to Coast edition.
Yeah, no, I mean, yeah, when you look at it that way. Absolutely. Yeah.
Next one, I think, is just a weak echo of the former one, Death Valley, I wrote.
Well, that's a cool one, and that actually makes me, your previous one made me think of Niagara Falls. A Niagara Falls edition would be pretty funny.
Yeah.
So maybe you've got a series that has Death Valley, Niagara Falls, and I don't know, Grand Canyon or the Everglades.
Like a Parks edition. Yeah.
I'd say like a the sort of weird intersection of, natural beauty with tourist mecca,
And danger.
kind of, and danger.
Right?
Yes, danger,
Yeah.
of course. All right, good one. I like that one a lot.
Thank you. The next edition, I don't even know exactly what this would be, but I know it would be called the Moviegoer Edition. Inspired by cinema, but also inspired by the great American novel that I've never read called The Moviegoer, which I know is set in New Orleans. And I was also thinking something New Orleansy, but what would be New Orleansy? And so it kind of all came together in The Moviegoer.
I don't know anything about the novel, and you can't tell me anything about it because you haven't read it either.
Set in New Orleans.
But I like the New Orleans angle. I like that a whole lot. I'm about to go to New Orleans and leave the kids with the grandparents and soak in some culture. So I'll report back. But it's pretty easy to presume that that would make an amazing addition.
Yeah.
That one you could really blow the roof off from a illustration creativity standpoint.
And the Field Notes folks are big, we know they're big Kubrick fans. We've talked about that before. There's a way to
Oh
get it,
yeah. Oh,
American
I think
movie going, and yeah.
oh cinema, yeah, that would be absolutely just a you could get, there's so many directions you could go with that.
I have no idea what
And
the
that
notebook would look like, but
right, it could go and it could be anything. And that was, when I mentioned Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, I think it was I saw your moviegoer buzz there, and I think you could again kind of pick three movies or, genres like the Western, the noir, and, I don't know. There's, do they, I keep talking about these things in threes, but do they really do three distinct books that much? I mean, they've done the Crops edition. They did the beer stuff, right? Where it was kind of like three different kinds of beer.
Yeah, right. And they a lot of times they'll do three different colors. The
Yeah.
coastal, those are divided into two, three packs, and each of the three are different. The color's the same though.
Right. Yeah. I mean, so maybe they wouldn't push it so far as to do three, completely different entities for each book, but that's what this is all about.
Yeah.
Top 10 future field notes.
The
Can I inject one that I thought of?
no, this is all me.
Fair enough. Number
No, go
nine.
ahead, go ahead.
The one, and this is probably the one I feel most like personally passionate about. It's just something I've been really interested in the last few weeks, and is another just gold mine, but a Negro Leagues edition I think would be super cool. And I could apply that, the baseball Negro Leagues is what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
I could say the same for Blackwing editions, for Field Notes, for I mean really those two, I guess. I might even be difficult to decide whether if I had the choice I would pick a Blackwing pencil edition or a Field Notes, but that I'm just really fascinated by that era, just for everything it represents, not only for the struggle and for the just absolute sort of remarkable nature of building your own system when every other system is intent on putting you down, but also just the amazing aesthetic accomplishments. Like, the uniforms are beautiful, the names are poetic, the team names are poetic, the style of play was creative, the journalism that surrounded it was imaginative, and you know, every bit is just building a kind of literary form out of the entire universe. It's just an amazing I don't know, source. And my next pilgrimage destination is to go to Kansas City and go to the Negro Leagues Museum.
Oh yeah, that'd be something.
Which, I'll post a link, but the director of that museum is very active on Twitter, and it seems like a really awesome public figure and really passionate and just loves to kind of, you know, share information, but also, you know, bring in young interns, and takes major league players on a lot of tours, and just really active sort of ambassador for a really cool part of the game of baseball. And so that would be my addition.
Certainly an American topic that's filled with myth and wonder again as well. Maybe not myth, totally. But yeah, they're mythic figures.
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of interesting, because I think the tendency in myself as well is to say, oh, I can't wait to read these mythical tales. But really, what I've realized is that part of that is because it's just not recorded very well. So you end up kind of relying on storytelling more than on, you know, careful statistical calculation, because they just don't have as reliable records. So it's kind of this flip side of the coin of all the really fun stories. It's like, well, actually, it's sort of been reduced to only the really fun stories, you know, whereas Babe Ruth, you can calculate the exact number of doubles he hit from the seventh inning on. You know, with the Negro League stars, it's more like, you know, teammates once saw him hit a home run that flew all the way over the train that was passing by in the night, you know, in left field or whatever, which is a different kind of way of carrying on the myth.
I have two questions for you about that. So the first is, do you know if those team names are still corporate controlled, if they're licensed ever, or if they're sort of in the public domain?
That's a really good question. I have a feeling, I don't know. I know that there's a couple of entities that produce, you know, memorabilia. Mm-hmm. Ebbets Field Flannels makes a lot of them. And then there's one other. But that's a good question. I really don't know the answer to that.
Okay. And then is there a book or an article or something that you would point me and our listeners to?
I'll have to put them in the show notes. I don't think I could list anything. There's some of the online databases, like the Baseball Almanac you can go to, and baseballreference.com, which is a classic stats page. You know, if you search for some of them, like, you know, Cool Papa Bell or some of the iconic Negro Leaguers, they will link over to the Baseball Almanac pages, and you can read kind of shorter, 5-6 paragraph histories. But then I haven't read any big books. That's probably next on my list of to-dos, is to really dig into an actual cohesive history. And I'm still pretty new to the topic.
Yeah, cool. It's interesting.
But you can dig up a lot just from Google searches. Like, one of mine was to Google Houston Negro Leagues, and I learned, you know, for example, that there was a team in Newark called the Newark Eagles that was a pretty storied team. But as baseball was integrated, and, you know, the Negro Leagues as a business kind of started to peter out, they were searching for a new market, and they actually traveled to Houston and became the Houston Eagles. And didn't go anywhere. Houston had an established, I think, minor league team at that point. And it only lasted a year or two, but it was this kind of, you know, that was the extent of Negro Leagues baseball in Houston, was this one team. I might be wrong that it's the extent of, but it was the kind of main touch point, was this one team. So that was the tidbit I learned just by sort of Googling and following some trails and finding a few blog posts. But I'll take a look around and post some stuff in the show notes.
Awesome. That's great. All right. Well, the next one on the
number
list.
Number nine.
Let's
finish your
list.
Yeah. Let's make it an even 10. Two more. Here we go.
Okay. Number nine on the list, I just wrote digest size. It would be, instead of the three books, it would be one book, approximately 150 pages, and sort of a different format. I think it'd be interesting to have a nice big bound book, by nice and big, same size, same dimensions, but three times the size. I'd like to see them do something
and it
like
would,
that.
You mentioned off air that the digest would actually just, the text of the moviegoer would be printed on every page of the digest.
Yeah,
is that still?
This is a long con for me to get a copy of a book I've been meaning to read. This whole top 10 list. Yep.
Okay, number 10.
Number 10. This is the pinnacle of the list, really. If pinnacle meant the opposite of what it means, something birds, I wrote.
Hey, let's do this again next week, Adam. What do you say?
Sounds good, Ted.